Joining me now for the second of today's underreported segments is Halima Bashir. She was a doctor in her native Sudan, was tortured for telling UN monitors about atrocities in Darfur, and now she lives as a refugee in London. She's written a very moving new memoir called Tears of the Desert. I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show today. Hi.
Hello.
I understand that Halima Bashir is not your real name, and on the cover of the book, you're covering your face for the photo. Why have you had to do that?
The first reason for doing that is to reduce the risk about me, because I'm wanted by the authorities in Sudan. And the other reason is that because women, they are not talking about their experiences, and it is something it's not acceptable in our community for women to talk about experiences like mine to the world and to expose herself like this.
Well, you had some horrific experiences, and I'm always uncomfortable putting people through a description of some of those things. But you can say whatever you want and go as far as you want as we come along telling the story. But I wonder about the name. Is Bashir a common Sudanese last name? Because the president of Sudan is Omar al-Bashir, isn't it?
Yes.
You just took his name?
No. It's just come by accident, by chance. But it is a good way to make a comparison between the person who stand behind all the crisis in Darfur and with one of the survivors.
Were you born in Darfur?
Yes, I have been born in one of the villages in South Darfur.
Now, I'm always reluctant to talk about tribes when I talk about Africa, because that plays into all sorts of stereotypes. But is the fact that you were a member of the Zaghawa tribe important to understanding the story?
Yes. Yes. The Zaghawa tribe and the other black African tribes, they... in Darfur, there are more than 70 different tribes. They are divided into three groups. One is Arab tribes originally, and the other is black African tribes in origin. And the Zaghawa, Masalit, and Amfor is one of the biggest three group of the black African tribes.
And that's important. That's an important distinction, because we often think of these conflicts as being religious, but you're a Muslim.
Yes, all the groups who are fighting now are Muslims, but it is not a religious issue, and it is not a tribal issue, as has been told to many people who are now, they think it's a tribal issue, but it is not. It is a typical ethnic cleansing, and it's a war between Arabs and black African.
You became your village's first formal doctor. What does that mean? You were the first to apply Western medical practices?
Yes, I'm the first doctor in my village, because I have been sent away. My father sent me away to Khartoum to do my education and everything until I get my graduation as a doctor.
Well, it seems odd that a family that also would have you undergo female circumcision at the age of 8 would then do something like send a female off to medical school.
Yes.
Is it unusual that your family did that sort of thing?
It's not just our family. It's one of the customs of many Sudanese people who are practicing female circumcision, and taking it is as one of the important traditions that should have been done to the children before the age of school. And it is not just in Sudan. It have been practiced in many different African countries.
No, I understand. I was just saying that we see that as something very old and traditional, and then something like a woman going to medical school as being very forward-thinking.
Yes, this because I've been done a long time, more than 30 years ago, have been practicing this. But now, people now more aware about the bad consequences of a female circumcision, and now have been banned in many areas, and people just trying to think about to stop doing it.
The conflict in Darfur began in 2003. Where were you living at the time?
At that time, I were in Khartoum in my at university studying in my last year. Mm-hmm. And when the conflict began, we heard that there was a group of black African have attacked the Afasha airport in North Darfur, trying to stand to say stop discrimination, stop ethnic, stop racism and everything, and they asking about equal opportunities and the equal services and sharing in the country.
Most of what we've heard about in this country is that the Janjaweed have come into Darfur and committed atrocities, and they come in on horseback. Are they a nomadic group, and are the people who are the victims the farmers and other people who are settled down?
Yes, exactly what you are saying. The victims are the black African groups who were settled down, and they own most of the land in Darfur. But the Arab tribes, the Janjaweed militia, most of them are nomadics traveling from area and area.
Was racism something that you had to contend with when you were growing up? Or is this something that just seems to have burst into Darfur in recent years?
It's something has been done for a long time. It has been done by the Arab tribes who were governing the country and doing everything in Sudan, because they have got the power, they have got everything. There was clear racism, and we felt that because we have been to the other different parts, Arab areas, and we lived with them, and we graduated there, and we felt
you went
that
to Khartoum.
Yes, we felt that there is a clear discrimination between the blacks and the Arabs.
But after you got your medical degree, you went back to Darfur.
Yeah.
Were you in your home village?
No, I went to work in a hospital there in South Darfur, not my home village.
Did the Janjaweed attack?
They were just attacking at that time the far villages, and most of the villages have been attacked in western Darfur and in the north as well. But they start attacking our village in the late 2003 and 2004.
My guest is Halima Bashir. She's written with the help of Damian Lewis, Tears of the Desert, a memoir of survival in Darfur. It is published by Ballantine Books in the One World imprint. So the Janjaweed attacked, and now I leave it up to you to tell us what happened as much as you want.
What happened exactly at in late 2003? After the war started in Darfur, and we were treating the injured people, and there were different kinds of wounds, most of them are burn and gunshot. And after that, there are so many different organizations and UN people. They came to investigate about what is happening exactly in Darfur. And
so you, as the local doctor, reasonably told the UN observers what you had seen and the kinds of things you were treating.
Yeah, sure. And even as they asked me, and I gave them my opinion frankly about what is happening, why exactly the reasons the war started. And I told them that it's just typical racist. This is because of the discrimination. Our people stand up and they said, stop everything, and we need our equal rights and equal opportunities.
Did you know that you were putting yourself at risk by reporting the violence to the UN observers?
At that time, I didn't realize that I'm putting myself in a risk until after I have been called by the security people, and they took me and they made me to sign a declaration not to, to tell anybody any information or to give information to any organizations or agencies there. After that, I have been transferred and moved to North Darfur, to far village there, to work there, as a result of my talking, and they punish me.
They
by
tortured
just
you.
Moving, and in that village, they attack a school of young children, and they rape more than 40 girls with their teachers, and we treat those girls. Again, I report this incident to the UN troop, and then after that, they came and they took me to their prison, and they did many bad things for me, including rape and the other things, other violence and abductions.
And was there no one aware of what had happened to you? Was there no one there to try to help you?
No one, I think, at
the
that
UN?
Time. Nobody exactly, because everybody is, they are trying to do their works and trying to do their jobs, and the situation was very complicated, and the people, just everybody is running for himself, and everybody who have been treated badly, they kept silent at that time, and they are not talking and telling that.
But what's the point of having UN observers if anyone who talks to them is going to be punished?
Yes, exactly, because, you know, this, the Sudanese government, who are responsible of the war in Darfur, they doesn't want any information to be given to the UN people, whom the people who were trying to report everything exactly as it is and told it to the world, and this will expose them to the world and maybe put them in trouble.
Were the people who took you and tortured you and raped you, as you said, were they officially connected to the government, or
yes,
this is not the Janjaweed or some other group that was out there?
Yes, they are officially connected to the government, and even the government, they are the Janjaweed as well, because they are tribe, Arab tribes.
So, you were you in bad physical shape at this point?
Yes.
What did you do?
I escaped the area and went back to my village. But unfortunately, after 4 or 3 months, our village have been attacked and our people have been killed, and most of the houses have been destroyed completely, and including my father has been killed, my aunt killed, my granny, all, most of our villages have been killed at that time in the first attacks. Then we have been attacked again, second attack. But after this, they came to me and to looking after me. At that point, I decided to flee the country. And
what do you think was more damaging to you, the physical abuse or the psychological abuse, the emotional abuse?
I think the psychological and the emotional abuse is the most difficult part, and the physical things can be treated and can be healed, and even if it leaves scars or something, it's not as big as the psychological trauma what's happening to the people. And because for a long time, since we grown up, we felt that those people, they treat us differently, and you felt yourself as if you are an animal and not treating like normal human beings. It's not fair.
Rape as a weapon of war is usually practiced where the woman who is the victim winds up also being stigmatized within her own culture. Is that what happened in your village as well?
Yeah.
Or do people understand and sympathize?
People, most of them, not understand exactly what is happening and why this, but the most what have been told even to the women who have been treated like that is either this has been told by the Janjaweed militia, if either you have been killed or you have to be raped, and get pregnant and give a birth for an Arab child, and there will be no more black African in Sudan.
Were you married?
Yes, I'm married. I get married, yeah.
Uh-huh. And then did your husband leave with you when you decided that you had to get out of this and go to London?
Yes, he. My husband, actually, he's not. He's he away from the country before the war, because he have a connection with the SPLM, who were fighting in the south more than 40 years ago, and he know everything.
So did they connect you to him, or were they simply upset with you because you were the doctor who talked to the UN?
Yes, we have been connected to each other, yeah.
And then how did you get out of Sudan?
It's money, you know. Money talks in Sudan. If you are wealthy, man, if you have a lot of money, the people can do anything for you. If you give them a lot of money, they can get a visa, get a passport, get everything.
Well, England and the United States are not all that welcoming to people who say that they're looking for political asylum. Were the British okay? Did they allow you in without any real hassle?
I didn't win my case smoothly because, you know, as the British government, they have a policy that for the Darfurian case, especially, the Darfurian people, Darfur is not safe for the people to live there, but they are said they are going to send them back to Khartoum because it's safe for them, and this is one of my problem with the British government at that time. And even they said, because I already lived in Khartoum and without nothing happened to me in Khartoum, and it's safe for me to go back.
Well, the Sudan used to be a British colony, so wasn't there a Commonwealth connection? Couldn't you stay because you were from a Commonwealth country? Or is it no longer a Commonwealth country?
I think it's no longer, and because, you know, the Sudan have been one of the British colonies. I think it's like something, a political issue. We cannot understand exactly what is going on around there.
So what are your circumstances now? You have finally been accepted into England?
Yes.
Can you practice medicine?
Yes. But I'm not thinking about practicing medicine in UK.
Would you hope to do it sometime in the future?
No, in the future. I'm going to go back, actually, to Darfur after the situation is going into better and change. I'm going to go and work there.
And help all the other victims,
yes,
of this terrible situation.
Yes, help my people, because it's meaningless to stay and doing nothing. It's better for me to go and...
But it must have been a real culture shock to... Then go to London, where there isn't this kind of craziness and violence.
No,
was not something that gave you any peace of mind?
Yes, because, you know, London is so many different people, different colors, different cultures. They are living together in peace without any problem.
What do you think of the way the rest of the world has dealt with the horrors of what's happened in Darfur? How did you react when the ICC charged Omar al-Bashir with genocide this past summer?
Our reaction at that time, we were just very happy, and we cannot explain our feelings and for happiness at that time, because we felt that as if justice is coming into the way.
Although it's not going to be acted on. None of the people who've been indicted by the international court are likely to be brought to trial. He says that no genocide ever took place. In fact, he said recently, no one has more compassion for the people than we do in Sudan. And he just launched a 3-day meeting, I think it starts today, to hammer out what he calls a national vision for peace in the Darfur region. The African Union, the Arab League, Egypt, Libya, and Qatar will all be in attendance. Do you think that's a sign of progress?
I don't think this is a sign for progress, because it has been done before many times, and with the result is no success, and the situation is still not changed. And I think if the people and in charge go through the ICC ruling and going to trying to punish the criminals and bring them to the court, I think this will be a good idea.
They didn't invite any of the Darfuri groups to participate in this meeting, so maybe it doesn't all mean that much. Do you fear any retributions as a result of writing this book?
Yes, I feel I am in fear. I am in danger, real danger. But what I'm doing now, because my family and my people still, they were in a bad situation, and I have to do something for them, and talking is just the only thing I have on my hand now to do for them.
Well, I appreciate your coming by to talk with us. My guest has been Halima Bashir, who's written with the help of Damian Lewis, Tears of the Desert, a memoir of survival in Darfur. It's published in the One World imprint of Ballantine Books. Thank you so much.
Thank you.